afraid of your freedom.
It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. And Rick Newman's on the phone. Rick is a columnist for Yahoo Finance, who's been a guest on my show many times and now has a new book out, just published this week, called Liberty for All, a manifesto for reclaiming financial and political freedom. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Great. Thanks for having me.
One of the things that I want to talk to you about first, because you touch on the subject a little bit in the book, is this measles thing that's been going on for the last couple of weeks and really got blown out of proportion because politicians mouthed off about it this week. We've got something like 14 states now, and I can't even keep track of it. It's well over 100 people, including a whole bunch of really little kids who are too young to have been immunized. But we've got parents who refuse to give their kids vaccinations because they bought into some BS that they heard from Jenny McCarthy or whoever. But it also comes down to people like Rand Paul and Chris Christie saying, look, they're your kids, you're the parents, you should get to decide. What do you think about that?
Here's what I think about it. We are misunderstanding what personal liberty is all about. And I've had discussions with some of these so-called anti-vax parents, and their contention is, look, we have the right to do as we wish with our children. And here's the sort of flaw in that logic. People do have the right to live their lives as they wish, as long as there's no cost or no risk imposed on anybody else. When there is a cost or a risk of one person's behavior imposed on somebody else, well, we have civil institutions in place that have been dealing with those kinds of issues ever since the beginning of the country. I mean, this is what legislatures do. This is what courts do.
It's like the old,
this is why we have laws and rules.
It's like the old saying, your right to swing your arm ends where my nose begins.
And there are a lot of examples of this that are, in a way, simpler to understand than this issue with the vaccination. So just think about speed limits, for instance. Literally every state in the union has a speed limit because we have decided as a society people do not have the right to drive at any speed because it endangers other people. So, and this is not even controversial, really. So the problem with the vaccinations is, yes, if this had no effect on anybody, including the kids, by the way, who are unvaccinated, then fine. It really is your personal liberty to choose to be that way. But because this does have an impact on other people, we have civil institutions in place that basically say you need this. It is worth pointing out that there are exemptions in most states for people who, you know, claim to have a good reason for not getting their kids vaccinated. So they're not technically mandated to do this, but we may see a change in that as we start to realize that there really is a cost to society of people exercising what they think is their personal liberty, and I contend is just a little bit of selfishness.
Yeah, I agree. For the same reason we make you put your kid in a child seat, we should be able to tell you have to vaccinate your child. But also it's worse than that, because if the kid's not in the child seat, other children won't be hurt when that child gets hurt. When you don't immunize your kid, you're endangering what's called herd immunity. The more of us who have a vaccination protect everybody else who's around us. It's like you would not come to work coughing and sneezing over all of your coworkers. You certainly wouldn't want to have lunch at a restaurant where the people who are there have, you know, hepatitis.
Yes, and society has settled this question. For the most part, we accept that society protects children in certain ways, and sometimes it has to protect them against their parents. So, again, this idea that personal liberty means you can just do whatever you want, regardless of the cost or risk you impose on somebody else, that's bogus. I mean, the nation has never cottoned to that idea, and it doesn't now as a society. So if everybody did that, you'd have anarchy. My argument is, let's think about personal liberty in more practical ways. Let's try to optimize personal liberty within reasonable boundaries, and we can all be better off if we do that.
I'll tell you what really drives me crazy about this more than anything else is that the media treats the measles story the same way it treats the climate change story, which is you have all the scientists on one side who say, look, this is the way it should be if we're going to go forward as a society, because we know the science. So they bring a scientist on, and then they have an ignoramus on the show also, because, you know, they're an anti-vaxxer or a climate change denier or a truther or whoever they are, and they get equal billing on the show, creating this false equivalence, and then the viewer thinks, well, it's really a 50-50 thing. It's not a 50-50 thing. It's a 99.999 to 0.001 thing.
Well, Paul, there comes a time when you have to look beyond the media, as wonderful and self-righteous as it is, and hope that people out there just have good enough common sense to figure out where the truth falls. And honestly, I mean, you can see in the reaction to this whole thing. I mean, this is something a lot of people have never even thought about. You know, they just get their kids vaccinated. They assume everything's fine. Everybody else is doing the same. They have to think about it. They say, what? What's going on? And they think about it for about 5 minutes, and they say, well, that sounds crazy to me. These parents ought to get with the program. I think that's what's going on here.
Just one last thing on this subject, because I can go on about this for an hour.
I can tell.
Yeah. just one last thing about it. I was watching Larry Wilmore's show last week, and he had a panel, and one of the people was an anti-vaxxer, and one of her arguments was, do you know that the companies, the pharmaceutical companies that make these vaccines, have made $40 billion from these vaccines? And at home, I said, good. I want them to make, you know what? I'm sure the people who make brakes for cars have gotten rich from that as well. I want you to have brakes in your car. That's a good thing.
Well, this is another question that is settled in America. Do we want capitalism? And we do. I mean, as a society, we want capitalism.
Yeah.
That's what capitalism does. If we didn't have a profit motive, we probably wouldn't have most of these vaccines, because it would be in nobody's interest other than just a humanitarian self-interest to devise them. That's why we have many of the wonderful things we have.
All right, this leads me right into one of the chapters from your book, Liberty for All. Talking with Rick Newman here on the Big 550 KTRS. Chapter 11, A Little Learning is Still a Dangerous Thing. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think people are not as formed as they ought to be, I'm really in this book talking about economic decision making and, you know, people's financial well-being. That's
yep.
what I do in my day job as a journalist for Yahoo Finance, and people are making some bad decisions because they're just not well informed, and I'm going to blame the media for much of this, Paul. You know, basically what the media does these days is foment arguments between politicians and sort of create these oversimplified villains. There's the left and the right. There's the Republican and the Democrat, blue and red. Everything, you know, has to get boiled down to kind of an oversimplified morality tale. And the economy is nowhere near that simple. Many of the problems that are affecting real people in their everyday lives are not political problems, and there is not a political solution out of Washington that will solve the problem. These have complicated causes that involve globalization. It involves digital technology, which is changing almost every industry. And when people watch cable news and they think, oh, it's the Democrats' policy or the Republicans' policy that has got me in this pickle, they're misdiagnosing the problem, which means they're not going to come up with an effective solution. So people have to work a little bit harder to understand what is changing in the American economy. And that's how you solve the problem. That's how you get ahead. You figure out what's wrong if you want to make it right. And I just want more people to do that.
You think for many people, the problem lies in the reflection in the mirror?
You cannot generalize, but we have, a terribly simplistic way of talking about important issues. And I think everybody got a little bit too comfortable. I include myself in this. We got so accustomed to the idea. I mean, you hear people spout this over and over. Every generation is supposed to be better off than the one before. I mean,
yeah.
we are like automatons in our belief in this, as if this is supposed to happen automatically. It's what's going on is suddenly it is not happening automatically. The data shows that. Many people are experiencing that. We're on the verge of a generation that's actually going to be a little bit worse off than the one before. But there are many exceptions to that, and the exceptional people who are going to be better off than their parents are the ones who are making it happen for themselves. That is what people have to do right now, is forget about some policy solution, kind of tune out the political noise, and figure out your own solution.
Do you think it's possible, this is my own little theory on this, how each generation should do better than the one before it. Do you think it's possible that the baby boomer generation, which I am a part of, did so well that we almost made it impossible for our children to get past us? You know, like, I think we didn't just take one step up from our parents. We took maybe five steps up from our parents and got so far and so advanced and so comfortable that for our children to surpass that is such a high bar, they can't do it.
Yeah, there's a lot rolled into that question, and I'll just try to quickly address two elements of it. First, yes, the baby boomers did do extremely well, but honestly, the conditions were set for the baby boomers to do extremely well. I mean, they came of age at just the right time. They had just the right access to technology. You know, that was at a time when much of the wealth created in America stayed in America, which is not really the case anymore. So baby boomers were kind of the last to get in on what you might call the sort of glorious 30 or 40 years following World War II. And we have a different, we just have a different economy right now. The other element I want to just real quickly is, how do you define getting ahead of the prior generation? If you define it for the most part as just the accumulation of material stuff or things that make your life better and more comfortable, I mean, there's a point of diminishing returns there. You can only have so much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you have to start saying that this is not, maybe this is not the way we need to define what good living is. And I think we're seeing some churn that shows people are rethinking that. You know, you do hear people saying, you know, I'm really interested in a more simple life. I don't want to have all this debt. I'm working all the, you know, I'm working 60 hours just to pay for stuff that doesn't really make me feel better. You're seeing pockets of people saying, yeah, I'm kind of getting sick of that. I don't think that's caught on nationwide. We're still seeing people running up credit much like they did before the recession. So we have a few lessons still to learn here.
But you also have a lot of people, you know, the jobs report came out today. I know you're fully aware of this because you wrote about it on Yahoo Finance. And you know, a lot more people got jobs in the last month. And when they revised the numbers from the previous 2 months, they were up as well. But we're still at this point where people have kind of stagnant wages and they're not really making more money, and yet, you know, things are still continuing to cost more, and it's become more difficult to get by for the average American middle class worker, hasn't it?
Well, the trend in the last 6 months looks good, but median income, when you adjust it for inflation, is still something like 4.5% lower than it was 15 years ago. So that is that's not a lost decade. That's a lost decade and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And the median income is what the typical family earns. That is, you know, that is, that tells you how ordinary people, how frustrated they are. Their earning power is less than it was. You know, it's harder to afford the things that are getting more expensive, such as college education and healthcare. And that is the definition of declining living standards. So, yes, we've seen a nice, we've seen the economy finally hitting a recovery about 5 years later than it should have, but a lot of people are still in a hole. And just, you know, 6 months of upward trend does not mean people are going to get out of that hole. And I think a lot of people are going to feel very frustrated for many years to come, unfortunately.
So where does self-reliance come into that as a solution?
It comes into taking matters into your own hands. Like I was saying before, my opinion is we just need to completely forget about any kind of solution to this problem of the struggling middle class. I mean, you're going to hear every politician talking about this as we get, as we lead in now to the 2016 presidential election. They're not going to help you. There's nothing they can do. So I want people, you know, I think people can do a lot more for themselves if they focus more on their community. I mean, if you care about civic issues, get involved locally, where you can actually make a difference. You know, you can actually improve your quality of living by getting involved in your local community, and forgetting about what's going on at the national level.
Well, what about as a worker? What can you do about moving yourself forward so that, you know, you do keep pace with the cost of all those other things and your career can take that next step?
A lot of things. It depends, you know, on your situation, obviously. But the first thing is to, I encourage people to do a vulnerability assessment. You need to understand how digital technology, this is a revolution that is only just beginning. You need to understand how this is going to affect you in the next 5, 10, and 15 years. 5 years out, we can get a pretty good idea. 10 years, we don't know. But you need to look around and say, how vulnerable am I to some kind of new technology? Because there's a huge industry of technology disruptors who are trying to disrupt every job and every industry they can.
Mm-hmm.
And if yours is vulnerable, they're going to get you. So what do you need to do? Do you need to get retrained? Do you need to get some new skills? Do you need to move? Maybe you do need to move. Or is it a good idea to invest in a home? I mean, you know, this whole idea that owning a home is the American dream. Owning a home actually interferes with the American dream for many people because it blocks you from going to where the opportunity is. If you commit to a home, you're stuck there. It's not, you can't sell a home every 2 or 3 years these days. You need to know that, and you need to make choices that allow you to have flexibility and agility and be able to move where the opportunity is, because the opportunity zones are there, but they're not everywhere.
What about the old save 10% for your retirement? Is that still true?
You know, I wish it were as easy as a sort of a rule, but let's be safe and raise it to 30%. I don't know what the right number is. You know, the national saving rate right now is about 5%. Economists are happy that it's 5% because it used to be almost zero.
Yep.
You know, if you assess how much stuff do you buy, do you really need, and how much can you, you know, how much of stuff do you buy that really doesn't do anything for you, doesn't make your life better, doesn't make you better off, doesn't improve your living standards? You know, some people can't cut back because they have kids. They need to, you know, it's very difficult when you're spending all your money on kids.
Or you're living, you know, a lot of people are living paycheck to paycheck, Rick. They can't even get to the 5%.
I know, it's difficult, and it's especially difficult with nobody getting a raise and, you know, just no wiggle room. But, you know, here's the next step that can happen. You have no wiggle room, and then you don't even have a job.
Right.
Because you got digitized out of your job. I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody this is easy, but I'm going to say assessing your vulnerabilities and figuring out how to get ahead of the trends instead of behind them is essential, and you're only going to end up worse off if you don't do that.
Watch out, or those disruptors are going to get you. The book is called Liberty for All, A Manifesto for Reclaiming Financial and Political Freedom by Yahoo Finance columnist and my old friend Rick Newman. Thanks for coming back on the show, Rick.
Thanks for having me, as always, Paul.
Good luck with the book. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.